opportunity to be standing in front of a group of parents, and I know those opportunities arise, you have an obligation to tell the parents that that's step number one, is number one.
And I gotta tell you that for me that happens all the time. So we're free.
Okay.
We're free. Just stand
in the room. We're not the ones that need to be told.
Hi, I was involved in the last redistricting process, where, in my opinion, it was a very minimalist process with data that was not accurate. And I'm now at a school that was 370 a few years ago and is now almost 700. Because of the school shut down nearby, we love the kids, the school's great, but we're now, despite what Dr. Lewis said, we now have learning colleges because the school nearby was shut down. So my question is regarding this redistricting. Are you updating your data? Are you doing a new analysis of burgeoning neighborhoods, which ours is, where, you know, and especially for good schools, of course, you not only have parents moving in, but you also have, in this economy, a flight of private schools kids. So what data are you using? Also, secondly, I observed in the governance process a very south versus north orientation. So how are we going to make decisions that are good for our county with data as first and foremost versus fighting among districts?
Okay. Well, first let's talk about data. Dan, I'm going to ask you to come up for a minute and really get down at what I call the ground zero level about the data. But yes, first we're working very closely with the Cass County Government Planning Department to ensure that we are seeing the same numbers and we are capturing the same numbers in our planning department process. Now, Dan, I'm going to ask you to go a little further level to see how we talk to them about the data that we're pulling in preparation for this redistricting and school consolidation.
Good morning. There is no shortage of data that we have, that we collected, and that we continue to collect. I've been with the school district for about a year, actually. 1 year today was September 1st last year. And in that year, we have really gone out of our way and collected a lot of data. We have a firm that we use that goes out and collects housing data. So we know where all the new housing data is coming, where we think the new students are coming in. We've done enormous amount of quality control on knowing where the students live, checking addresses for this year and the previous years. So we have a very good handle as to where students live, where they go to school, and that whole cross of that, something that I'm not sure we've had in the system prior.
So are there projections available for individual schools that, like they were during that previous, that we can find somewhere on your website and what you're projecting for our schools so that we can analyze them and vet them and see if they're, you know, in our school we're having, I don't know if your data is collecting it, but we're slow. So I'd like to be able to see what you're projecting for our specific school.
Sure. We have projections for this year from last year, and we have those schools to be made available. After FTE Day, which is October 5th, after that day, within about 2 weeks after that, we'll have our projections for next year and the year after, and we can make those available as well.
Can you tell us which company you're using?
There's a firm that's called Metro Study,
mm-hmm.
and that's all they do is collect housing data for all the major metropolitan areas.
And where are they based?
Metro Study?
Yes.
Well, Metro Study is a nationwide organization. They have a Decatur office.
So they actually have someone here in the city of Atlanta. The last time we went through this, as I recall, and y'all can correct me, but when we went through this,
these folks have folks that go out there, count lots, count concrete. They do that every quarter. We have quarterly updates from them.
Do they ask how many children live in the house?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you go door, is
assumption
information?
We know where our students are. We've got them all to your building.
But the ones that are coming in.
Yeah.
And do they check with the utilities companies to find out what utilities are being cut on? Because according to the demographer at the University of Georgia, that is the most accurate way to determine who is moving in, instead of just looking at lots and things like that. So did they do that?
Well, they give us different data. We project the number of students based on our analysis of the existing subdivisions that have been built in the last couple of years.
I just want to know how they're collecting their data, that's all. Because
I can talk a little more afterwards. Absolutely.
This topic has come up, and I'm just going to make a very broad comment about it. And that's what people are really talking about. And the anger that you're hearing over that and the disappointment is because those parents, when that whole topic came up, parents went out, very knowledgeable parents, and there are very knowledgeable parents in any of these meetings. You've got doctors, lawyers, college professors. You have so many parents. They come to these meetings, they have meaningful input, but they don't feel like they're being truly heard. And I can tell you with respect to the Nancy Creek thing, I was president of the PTA at that time. We met with Dr. Lewis personally in his office with respect to all of this. We provided tons of data. None of that would take it into account. The demographic report that the county relied on was done by this outfit that took a cut-and-paste Word document and they inserted from Virginia, a survey that they done in Virginia, and they just put the
cat. Yes.
So that's all water under the bridge in a certain sense. Okay? But what I'm... My point is, and having come to these meetings, is that the anger that parents have and the frustration, it's hearing what we call EdU's battle being delivered to us, and we're told all these nice sounding things, but we don't see it in the classroom. We don't feel like our opinions are truly being taken account of. We feel disadvantaged. We feel cut off. And that's the source of the anger. And that's when you hear this bubbling up, these old issues keep bubbling up. Because people, the trust factor that you mentioned early on in your speech, your confidence in us, that is going to take a long, long time to repair. And we continue to hear bland, deflective answers. It's like pouring gasoline on fire.
And let me respond by coattailing on something you said, and that is that it's not going to happen overnight. I believe that the breakdown of the public trust has been happening for a long time. And it just exploded 2009-2010 school year. And there's some debate about how long this breakdown of trust has been occurring. There's some that feel within the last couple of years, some that feel 4 or 5. I've even had some say this thing goes back all the way 10 years ago. And you can cross that through 3 or 4 superintendents. I say that to say it's going to take almost one initiative at a time reestablishing a way to engage the parents to build that trust. You're right. I can stand here all day and say, we're going to do this differently. But until we execute an action behind it and show proof of it, it doesn't mean a thing. So the question I challenge you with is, okay, we're going to start this school consolidation, redistricting, redrawing lines. We have devised a plan where we're coming to every region and we're going to ask for focus groups to come work with us on looking at the data, planning for the ultimate decision that the board is going to have to make But here's where it gets a little rough. Here's where the rub is. In all instances, you may bring your input, you may bring your data. We have to agree to take it and use it as a part of our data. But when we get to a consensus, we have to get to acceptance. And acceptance may mean that it may not be the answer you wanted, but it is an answer that a consensus team has agreed upon. Now, where we have to make it different, and I would challenge Dan and Bob and Barbara and some of the other folks that are not here, is that if you all say it, when you bring it to the table, we're ignoring it, then we have to have something in place to show you that we took the data, we used the data, and we came to a decision. Where I need your help in is that you be present and accounted for, bring up the point and push it when you think we're not using it, but if we do use it and we get to a consensus decision, we agree that we got to a decision and it was the answer I wanted, it came out my way, or it didn't come out my way. To me, that's where it gets real different, because what I find is that just in my short months, when I do take the information that people bring and we use it and it goes their way, then I'm a hero. I'm a hero. When I take it and we use it and we come to a different decision and it's not the way we want, then I'm a bad superintendent. I'm no good. So we've got to figure out together, one, I think you're right. If we ignore, and I wasn't a part of, I get a pass on this one. I wasn't a part of the team that did the last round. Okay? I get a pass. I don't get a pass this time. So my responsibility is to make sure that the people that work under me, when you come forward and you bring the data, we got to look at it, we got to consider it, and make it a part of the decision-making responsibility. And then I need you, again, to accept that if we use it, it goes your way, it's good. If we use it and it doesn't go your way, then, you know, that's how it goes. But you might be right. Maybe we didn't. I don't know. I've got to ask these questions of these folks when we leave in the brief from this meeting. Is it true that the data came, you brought the information, you had your meeting, you said look at this, and we completely, deliberately, rudely ignored.
I'm going to send it to you. I've got my trust.
One final comment on that. In addition to seeing projection data, as soon as possible, what's your criteria that you're going to encourage the board to use as a business-minded criteria and not political? I mean, it's ugly. The state is telling us that our district is ugly in the way it operates. It is very... Not looking at the good of the whole, and I think we all, as parents here, want our school system as a whole to be stronger. We're embarrassed where we are. We don't want to be self-interested, but if there's good criteria that we can evaluate, that we can study, that we can believe, I think we can get behind it, and that was desperately lacking in the last process. And it became a bitter fight between individual board members. It was ugly. It was embarrassing. And so if you weren't there, please study that, learn from it, and take the state's critique of our school board and our district seriously in guiding a process that's a good one to use so that you minimize any self-interest.
Okay, we have time for one more question. I'll let you choose which one.
That is honest.
Anybody that's already asked a question, we're not going to pick on you. Come on, this lady with glasses. I'll go ahead and take it off. Let me just say this before you ask the question. Any other questions, please use the things last time. We copied them all, scanned them, and shouted you, incluido en español. So including those in Spanish, we got them. So the last question, thank you very much.
Good morning, and thank you for your transparency in the presentation. I'm Maggie Anderson. I'm the president of the PTSA at Chamblee Middle. And the Is there another school? If you are serious about healing the trust, that obviously there is a big gap in trust. If you want to heal that, is there another school in the district that is as old as Chamblee High School? Is there another school that serves the entire district, that serves every ethnic group, that serves every level, socioeconomic level? Is there a better place to put that $51 million than in making Chamblee High School a place where students who are incredibly creative, dedicated, families who drive their kids across the district to get them there because they appreciate the program and are behind the learning. Is there a better place to put that money? Because those students, I don't know if you've been to a presentation over there, but those students live and thrive and do their work in the most horrible conditions. I've seen a choral presentation, an international night there. It breaks your heart to see that when you know that at Westminster or other high-level schools in our area, the facilities are phenomenal. Those students leave school with a feeling, I can succeed. I am giving something, contributing something very important to my community. At Chamblee High School, do we give those students anything like that feeling? No. I mean, they may get it from their parents, they may get it from within. But we as a state, in order to heal our economy, in order to make business thrive, we need those excelling students to leave that school feeling like, I can conquer the world. I can get out there because I have been told that I'm important. And I don't think we're telling them that by letting them go to school in a crumbling building, perform in a cafetorium that is despicable.
So students at Chamblee are so successful. Just think, if we gave them a facility that was top-notch, how successful they truly might be.
So I respectfully say to you and the board members that are here to create the overall heal the trust by putting that allocation.
I'd like to piggyback on that, Maggie, and thank you so much for that support. I would like to challenge, as we're talking about challenges, all the Board of Education members to be a parent, to drive up and go through potholes that are in the drop-off student area and let your tires go into, you know, a foot or two deep. Drop your child off, proceed to park, and go in and dodge the trailers that have been put there that we did not know were coming openly. And then to go into the building and walk with your students. Go through the hallways. Try to open up your lockers. Go into the classrooms. Look at the retrofit AC systems that are in the classrooms that are a quarter of the size of this room that we are standing in. Talk to the children at Chamblee Middle School, at the elementary schools, who won't be able to go to that high school. Because it is in such disrepair, they will have breathing issues, asthmas, allergies that will prevent them from being able to come. I am disgraced. I've lived in the community for 16 years to go in that high school and see it in such disrepair, to have such top-notch teachers, administrators in a building that is coming down upon them, and to wait for slots for? Are we kidding ourselves? Yeah. It's going to fall on the kids.
It's
our
classroom. It's out. Let me say, I hear your plea. You have three of your math board members here that hear your plea.
All right. Yeah, but not our
but not our problem. I want them to go to the
house. Okay. But I'm the inmate of the district at Chamblee is one of your board members.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I do love you, though. The problem is, as parents, we've heard it since my child was in elementary, now she's in college. However, we've watched the other schools that were on the list get built. That's the problem. We were on the list, 1, 2, 3. And now you're talking about 4, that's 4 years from now.
let me re-clarify what I said about four, because I'm not sure. Let me say it again. Shandling has $11.7 million in SLOSS 3. There is a surplus of $40 million. There are stimulus funds available, with $58 million. And there's a potential of a SLOSS 4. That's four options that the board can consider. I need you to walk out with the right facts. And I don't want you to walk out and say, I said to you, wait on SLOSS 4. I didn't say that. What I said was, there are four pots of money that are potentially available to address. The question I got first from Ms. Brule about what are we going to do about Shandling High School. So please make sure you leave with that message. 11.7 sitting in SLOSS 3 for Shandling, a surplus of $40 million in SLOSS 3 for decisions to be made, potential bonds are available, $58 million available in October, and then a potential SLOSS 4. Your Board of Education is going to have to decide, and I hate putting my board members online, but at the end of the day, that's where the decision is going to get made. About that, and I got to tell you, I'll go to the next meeting, the next council meeting, and there'll be a pool of parents that's asking for a $10 million renovation at Cornwood. Let me tell you, that's a known over here. We're hearing additional work we need at Bellwoody High School. We're hearing additional work needed at Redding. So I'm saying all of this to say, I want you to understand, everybody's asking. But I think you made a great position today. Three of your nine board members heard it. I heard it. I don't get the vote, but I do get the influence. Maybe. I'll find out how much I got. But your plea has been heard, and you're not off the mark about that building. Barbara Poland tells me about it every other day. I've seen it for myself. I've been out there at school. I used to train in that school. It's been heard. Now the work must begin. When and how and where those dollars get made available by the board then. And it's a tough decision they've got to make.
All right, so everyone, we'll see you October 6th.